challenge the point of fact in your book. Is that true?
Yes.
In your book, you say that Charles Keating is, in fact, the biggest crook of the 80s and that whole debauchery that went on then. You say that?
I'll tell you, I'll read you exactly what I say, if you like. Well, I read you Paul Turley's letter about why he was convicted.
And then you made the comment that he was the biggest crook of the 80s. And of all that thing, his $282 million
yes.
was the biggest sum ever stolen at that time.
Yes.
You ever heard of Michael Milliken? Milliken, excuse me.
Yes.
I believe it was at least $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion. It was much more.
Are you sure all that money was stolen? I mean, he seemed to have invented some money. Well, I could never follow Mr. Milliken all that closely. He seemed to have found a way of printing his own, is all I can tell you.
It wasn't from the savings of money.
No.
From the junk bond. Michael, or your man may have been the biggest one in the savings of loan of that era. The biggest thief theft of all was Michael.
Okay, well. Fair enough. Yes, that's true. False in uno, false in omnium. There is, I have to just say one thing, though. There is a difference. Those who go in for putting their money in speculative stock or bonds options are, of course, the victims of theft just as much. If they don't get the return on their money and they find their money has disappeared and the moonshine artist with whom they invested it has gone away. But they were running a speculative risk, nonetheless. Now, it seems to me morally there is a slight difference between that and the person who puts his savings in a savings and loan. The sort of Wappinger Falls, not Wappinger Falls, what's the name of the town in... Yeah, that's right. And It's a Wonderful Life, you know. I mean, the very image of American thrift and the little guy getting his chance. If that operation is run with a crooked wheel, then I think a greater crime is committed against the humble and the simple than those who risk it with Michael Milliken.
Is the greatest crime of all those against the humble and the simple? Is that your opinion?
No, the greatest crime of all is against those of irony and taste. If people will go around being humble and simple, they have to expect a certain amount of ill treatment, that seems to me.
I agree. I also think, you know, amid your little propaganda film here, that there seems to be a subtext, somehow in the contradiction, that there is a big sin, that you point out contradictions in behavior. And, you know, I believe that Emerson and Whitman were better scholars or better spokesmen when they said, Do I contradict myself? I am vast. I contain multitudes. As opposed to someone who thinks, a contradiction. And that is the hinge upon which your film rests.
A contradiction, I think you'll find, is different from a negation. It is a negation of what people believed her to preach and do for Mother Teresa to go to Haiti, a place that was well known to be a place of extraordinary misery for its inhabitants, and where also it was very well known this was not visited on Haiti by an accident of geography or an unkind act of God, but by a deliberate racketeering regime involving the ownership of the island by a thieving, cruel family. And to praise the rule of that family and to accept titles of honor and decoration from it and its embraces and money from it that had been stolen. It seems to me that's not a contradiction. That's a negation of everything that people have been led to believe she stands for. Now, I have a second point, which is my point, which is actually it was consistent, not a contradiction at all. That is not what she was, so to speak, not supposed to do. It was what she did think she was supposed to do. That was her work. It was the justification of earthly power, of hierarchy, and of the surrender of the poor to the rich. But I occupy a minority position in this.
So some of my personal heroes, such as Russell and Paulin, received the Nobel Peace Prize, I felt a certain pride. And I therefore, Mr. Hart Kitchens, to make a few comments on how the Nobel Prize Committee was due in the case of Mother Teresa.
Did anyone when they were younger used to listen to the songs of Tom Lehrer? Remember Tom Lehrer? I used to like them very much. And does anyone remember why it was he stopped recording them? He was a great satirical songster, and he was a great teacher of math as well. and now lives in California. He stopped recording satirical songs when they gave the Nobel Peace Prize to Henry Kissinger, because he said, there is no further work for satirists in this country. You can't do better than that. He hung up his gloves completely, you know. The Nobel, I'm no great admirer of the ethics of the Nobel, or the discriminatory power of the Nobel Committee in any department. For example, they allowed both Vladimir Nabokov and Jorge Luis Borges to die without giving them the prize. Look, if you draw up a list of great writers, two lists, and ask people to say which of these is the list of the winners and which is the list of the non-winners, you will be amazed. I just do it over the last 30 years. It's difficult to say which is the most surprising list. The award of the Peace Prize to Mother Teresa was very extraordinary because she had not claimed, again, I say this to her credit, she had never claimed to do anything about peace at all or to have any interest in the subject. The nearest I think she could have claimed to involve herself in anything we understand as the composition of international differences, certainly, or the resolution of these by war, was to go to Bangladesh after the terrible war of separation with Pakistan, in an attempt to stop those, an honorable attempt, I would say, but a rather loopy one, in an attempt to stop those who had been forcibly impregnated by rape by Pakistani soldiers from resorting to abortion. So she did involve herself on a war front that time, but not in any issue of the war itself. If you look at the film of her getting the award and making the speech, you can't just turn up in Stockholm, take the money and run, as she may have expected she could do with all the prizes she got from people like Indira Gandhi and others. You've got to make a speech, and it's got to be about peace. So she said, well, I found out what the great threat is. The jaws are sort of starting to drop around. All these solemn Scandinavians are thinking, good grief, we've got to write one here. And it was really, really, really embarrassing. But I don't think I've read in the last few months any article about her. I mean, obviously, all articles had to begin with the saint of the gutters, the woman who devoted her entire life to the poor, blah, blah, and Nobel laureate, Mother Teresa. It was always there. It was never examined.
Okay. Let's summarize what you said. A principal non-opposition to abortion makes a religious fanatic, yes? Or the two are associated somehow.
Nope, in no way. I don't. Well, has anyone else received that impression from what I said?
He talked.
No, he's asking for me to confirm that's what I said. With your. It would be rude if I denied him an answer. I say, no, you may not proceed on the assumption that that's what I said, and I invite, in fairness, anyone who thinks that's what I said to say, yes, they do think so. Does anyone think I said that? You do, ma'am. Okay, well, that's two of you.
There are other people as well. Nat Hendel, for example, the Bluefoss, who is a professed atheist, a former ACLU board member, who also is extremely vocal in principle of opposition to abortion, right? Okay? So, I think the reason he is opposed to it is not because of any misplaced religiosity, but because of his opposition to the culture of death. I am an Indian citizen. I was born in India, I was raised in India. I hold an Indian passport. I'll fax you a copy.
No, I believe you. Some things I do take on faith.
At the time in my country's history, the late 70s, when the government, a socialist government, put so much stock in forced sterilization, she was one of the few people who stood by the poor of my country. You cannot dispute that. There are photographs of Mother Teresa with plenty of nice people who were dying. You chose not to include them in your half-hour film, all right? I understand why. That's perfectly okay. What I also want to point out is this. Let's go to the book yourself, which is based on the movie. I read the 9 reviews that appeared in the book subsequently, from the London Review of Books to the ones of the Progressive. Let's take one from the middle, right, the Newsweek one. Let me quote from the Newsweek review, so I won't be just for 2 lines.
This is our second encounter today, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I've got you now.
Specifics are, Hitchens hasn't done the extensive investigative work to justify the Scotch Earth Conservation. right? I think, as a journalist, you should put your work up for scrutiny. What I have seen is basically one ex-member of the order give you her version of what's happened. I think there have been scores of other trained professionals that have gone there and volunteered their services, right? There are people who live around there. It would be quite easy, perhaps, to conduct, several more disgruntled people rejection some of your own. I'd like to see some more of the evidence for that. I think the evidence, before you ask us to swallow this idea of, you know, this great conspiracy, essentially to propagate the plague over here. There may be 500 continents, but if the continents are producing none, so go about doing some same sort of work, perhaps that money and energy has not been displaced.
I cautioned you about some of this on the radio earlier, but I understand. It's just the rupee did not drop for a second. That's all. Look, I didn't say that if you had a principled or indeed an unprincipled, but nonetheless strong opposition to abortion, that you were ipso facto a fanatic and a fundamentalist. It's possible to be both. Mother Teresa, I thought, rather improved the odds on that by taking a position more extreme than anyone had ever yet thought of, right? By saying it was always and everywhere the moral equivalent of murder, and that contraception was the moral equivalent of it, and saying it was the greatest threat to world peace. Now, I'm sorry to have to repeat this to you, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot believe I wasn't plain on that point the first time round. No matter how extreme a position could be taken on the question of the unborn child, in other words, Mother Teresa found a more extreme and more fanatical and more fundamental one to adopt of her very own, okay? I'll just have to hope it went through this time. on Indira Gandhi, and I remember forced sterilization very well because I was at the magazine The New Statesman, which had a very long relationship with the Indian democratic culture, very much involved with opponents of the Indian emergency, some of whom were still friends of mine. With the declaration of emergency powers and martial law, the suspension of all civil liberties, the imposition of torture and detention without trial and censorship by Indira Gandhi, Mother Teresa's best friend in the whole of India. The first person to have her to Delhi and give her a medal and garland her and give her a large check and make her a guest and ward of the Indian state. This is the woman who sent her goons and thugs out into the Indian villages to castrate people by force. Well, I don't believe that by your friends you shall be known. I think it's actually a rather unsafe, an unsafe assumption, but you must be able to tell something about people by their choice of politician, and I say in my book, I think now, Indira Gandhi, a very odd choice of friend and patron for Mother Teresa, unless I'm right and there's no contradiction. I also cautioned you today against the lazy habit, if I may say so, slothful and possibly fallacious habit of thinking that in any argument the likeliest position is the one that's in the middle of any two positions taken about it. That doesn't have the shine of excellence to me. There's no dialectic to it. It means there's position A, well, there's position B. Well, all we look for is the position in the middle, and that's where we're now. The truth, as I once tried to say aphoristically, never lies, but when it does lie, it lies somewhere in between, in the mushy search for a rotten compromise. Therefore, because the London Review gave me a very, very, very long, very expert, very nice, very flattering review, written by an Indian, and the National Review gave me a not quite so long, but pretty long, rather nasty review, saying that I'd confused one or two points of doctrine and teaching, you go for Newsweek, because it's in the middle of those two. I think that's lazy. It is true that they said Hitchens doesn't prove his point. He doesn't muster the evidence. So I waited for the other shoe to drop. Okay, where's the challenge? Where did I fail there? On what point? They didn't have space, as you said, it was a short review, to say where that was. So I didn't feel my withers were unwrung. It was the first time I'd read Newsweek in 10 years.
I thought that the video was well done. May I make a compliment?
Thank you.
But I can understand how anyone ignorant of your work would look around them in a world of great disparities and inequalities and poverty and injustice. They would really be pushed to look for an alternative to create a better world. Now, you've made very clear that idol worship, idolatry, doesn't really need us anymore. And I'm interested in knowing about your your ideas of an alternative to the world society we live in today.
Okay. A good mandate. Well, on the first point, there's an old saying, again, it comes from medieval disputation, pessima corruptio optimi. The worst is the corruption of the good, or the worst is the good corrupted. And yes, it's probably true that Mother Teresa inspired people to think about these questions and encouraged them to think about the plight of those less fortunate, and may even have motivated some people to go and try and do something about it. To that extent, in other words, I think her actual work and her real beliefs were a betrayal of that naivete, of that genuine and honorable naivete. Now, I won't give you my entire program for the saving of humanity and the world. I can direct you to some suggestive stuff. You'll have to buy it, actually, that's what I think. You'll have to go to the bookstore and ask for my collected works. Which, if you're really serious about the question, seems like a phase on a quest. But I'll just say, I'll elaborate a little what I said before. I have in my life, as well as being in Calcutta, I've reported from, I think, about 30, no, certainly no less than 2025 or so, countries in what we fondly and I think rather condescendingly term the third world. And I've spent a lot of time while there talking to the sort of people who work on the relief of famine and poverty and also on the expansion of human rights. And I've met many, many people who I regard as braver and more dedicated and more selfless and more useful than Mother Teresa in doing that, and who do it for its own sake, who don't have any other reason to do it. And I'll just mention again, there's one consistent finding. You can go to Bengal, you can go to Bolivia, you can go to Zimbabwe. Everything really depends on the empowerment of the female. You need not resign yourself to poverty. You need not. In Africa, for example, anyone who spends any time in Africa notices a familiar sight. The woman carrying a huge bundle of firewood on her head or a water jug, while the guy walks five paces behind, sometimes carrying a stick. Okay, the work is done by women in Africa. They raise most of the world's children. They pull plows while their husbands supervise. They get pregnant when their husbands deem it right. Okay, and they have priests and shamans to tell them that's okay. Well, if you will just take the axe to that root, give that woman a handful of seed or a loan from a decent cooperative bank, give her the right to control her own fertility, limit the family size, care for the children she does have, not see half of them die, and the rest grow up illiterate and rotten with deficiency diseases, as I tell you. It's not miraculous, but it will seem like it to them and perhaps to you. Go back in a year. That's all you need to do. Now, I repeat, an entire life of absolute pitiless dedication was spent saying that simple conclusion was blasphemous, humanistic, materialistic, a rejection of the love of God and the teaching of the Bible. I rest my case.
A quick comment and then a question. Regarding Professor Ketterett's response to your talk, I don't think that the honor due Mother Teresa needs the support of Dorothy Day or Archbishop Romero. Furthermore, from talking to John Summers, the chief sponsor of tonight's talk, he tells me that Kurt Ketterett, a Catholic priest, co-sponsored your event. That being the case, I didn't really expect a rigorous defense of Mother Teresa from Father Ketterett. But for you, Mr. Hitchens, watching particularly the funeral of Mother Teresa, I saw what appeared to me a lot of love coming from the people of India. And it seemed quite right to me that that love would be a perfect response to the love that Mother Teresa gave them, and I saw that. And when Peter Jennings was talking with you, all we heard was perhaps you were the only person there that hated her, and he even turned the mic off on you. And I just want to know, how do you explain all that love that I saw coming from all those people in India? Because that doesn't square with your silly little video, Hell's Angel, and all this other stuff.
Thank you.
You should hear that. I obviously can't be expected to arbitrate between you and the good father. There's something going on here that I think doesn't concern me.
I asked you a question.
But I don't want to seem to be agnostic about that, but I will claim to be about it. I think to see the true outpouring of love for Mother Teresa, You had to be in the studio with Peter Jennings that evening, where they couldn't find enough crowd to put the camera on. That's why they had to have a panel of hacks like myself to fill up the dead time. Now, I have Mr. Muhir Bose, who's a very, very distinguished and decent Bengali writer, in my film, to say, look, people in Calcutta respect Mother Teresa. For one thing, they venerate age in India. For another, he doesn't say this, but I could add, they venerate piety, they venerate age, they venerate sincerity. She had all of that. People came out to pay their respects. But all those who were hoping to be able to say outpouring, you know, and all that, they found the words weren't fitting what they'd expected. Also, the Indian army, the Indian state, which had adopted her so long ago under the despotic regime of Mrs. Scandi, tended to be keeping the poor back by force. We may not know. But when the cameras panned over Victoria Park, which is a part of Calcutta I know quite well, what you could see was an enormous emptiness. They hadn't shown up. Now, as to Peter Jennings and myself, does anyone care about this? I mean, Mr. Jennings very decently said, would I come on? I thought, well, I know a poisoned chalice when I see one. Nightline could have asked me any time the last hour to comment on Mother Teresa. The program was called A Life for Charity. I mean, the whole set was rigged as a tribute, right? There's no separation of church and network in this country, believe me. And I knew that's the way it was going to be. I thought, okay, but let no one say this country is not a country where all opinions and all shades of opinion are canvassed. I can come on and piss on her funeral any day I like. And that's equal time. Now, there's a case, and I made it to myself. Say no. Don't do it. It's a trap. But Jennings seemed to be sincere in saying, look, we've got to get those who didn't agree in there sometime. And he had read what the Calcutta Press had said about her, the Calcutta Telegraph editorial that I quoted to you, which was a better index of Calcutta opinion, I think, sir, than either you or I are going to be able to utter. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And the moment when I was asked to do my burst, and I thought, okay, I've got to get it all in one now. I've got to do a bite. The camera went over to the upturned face, the dead, old, wizened face in the coffin like this. I couldn't see it because you're in a sensory deprivation environment at ABC headquarters. You can't see anything. But my wife, who's pretty hardened by now, as you might expect, probably had to be hardened to marry me at all, was watching at home, and even she was pretty shocked that what they'd done to me. I mean, in other words, here's Hitchens bleating into the ether all the things he doesn't like about Mother Teresa, and there's the camera lingering on her face as the incense is being applied. I've looked at the video, I honestly can't believe I ever took part in it, but it was better than not saying anything at all.
Indira Gandhi.
I smacked a little bit of guilt by association, which you decried on the radio program about McCarthyism. Is there a little contradiction there?
Only, I think, superficially. It's a persuasive point. Look, I said already that I think that the old saying by your friend shall you be known, or by shall we know you, can be misleading. It can be an amalgam technique. It can be used for a smear. But your choice of friends obviously doesn't say nothing about you, right? The fact was that she seemed to have a taste for a particular kind of, shall we say, rich and glitzy person of extremely conservative views. That in their company, she was inclined to go a bit runny. To say about Ronald Reagan that he was the greatest friend of the world's poor is piling it on a bit. To say to Princess Diana that she's the only woman in the world whose divorce you will by coincidence approve because you were unhappy is indulgent. I'll just call it that for now, okay? With Maxwell, with Keating, with above all, Michel Duvalier. I think after a bit it sort of stops looking like just coincidence. For it to be McCarthyite, I would have to have state power and the power of subpoena, and I don't. McCarthyism is not the expression of vulgar anti-communism. McCarthyism is the threat that people may be deprived of their jobs or their livelihood for the opinions they express. That can be backed by law. I'm therefore, even if I wish to be, not capable of committing that particular sin.
Hi, mine's just a comment. You don't need to respond, but I had three separate occasions that I
got time with the missionaries of charity and doing some work with them, and met Mother Teresa myself. And what I found with them is what they taught me was love, humility, nothing of what you say at all. And this is a personal experience I've had, and, which is an opinion, but I find it to be very true. And they are the epitome of what Christian love is in my feeling, and more than so than anyone I've met in my life. And it was the most beautiful experience I've ever had. And if we could all be a little more like them, the world would be a better place.
Well, that's very beautifully said, if I may say so without sounding in the least, I hope, condescending. And I think one would have to know you very well to risk commenting on it, and I don't. But I hope you won't think I'm being unctuous if I say that it doesn't look to me at first blush as if you needed to be taught about love and humility. No, it could be that some instinct for that was innate in you.
No, I didn't need to be taught that, but they were the purest example I've ever seen of that. I will say that.
Well, I have a different opinion. And I have some ex-sisters who tell a different story, but that's what we're meant to resolve.
Well, I just wanted to say that, like a lot of people, actually liked your critical view of Mother Teresa. There was one comment in it, though, that struck me as being really base and uncritical, and that was the shot at her allegedly being a virgin. And, my question to you is this, having seen the response to the film, do you think that people are upset about your critical and insightful look at Mother Teresa, or do you think that part of your really uncritical and unsubstantiated shots that you're taking at Mother Teresa might in fact be the reason that a lot of people in this audience are less than happy with what you had to say?
So risk them. Well, I can tell you this. I mean, I know that if I had left that out, it would have made no difference to some people, at any rate, who opposed the idea of having a criticism of her at all. In other words, you are not countering the criticism, but are opposed to the uttering of criticism of Mother Teresa. I can't help them, and I don't know anyone who can. I will admit that I operate on an ancient motto of my profession, which is, if you worry if you've gone too far, you almost certainly have not gone far enough. When there's a doubt in my mind about that, I always resolve it in favor of going too far. Yes. Some have I ever regretted it? Occasionally I have. Would this be such an occasion? Yes. Why? Because it allows people to change the subject to my poor taste, for instance, away from what I want them to be thinking about. However, if there is going to be a clerical cast of people who go around the world saying that it should be they who arbitrate and control the sex life of the poor, every bit of it, then it will continue, I think, to strike many people as bizarre that this self-appointed caste insists upon its own celibacy. In other words, that this preaching to the poor about the sexual life must be done by those who, as far as it can be established, have never had sex with anyone but themselves. This, I think, will be viewed in a future emancipated civilization as somewhat bizarre. Okay? I don't feel I'm under any obligation to take it as a normal thing. When I say I could have just said by a virgin, couldn't I? But I have no means as a journalist of knowing that that's true. And I don't make unfounded assumptions. And I don't make unexamined statements. I said presumable. I have no idea what the gay boulevardiers of Skopje were like in her Macedonian youth. I don't even know why she took ship to Ireland and then to Calcutta. Maybe it was that or marry the guy. I do not know, okay? And whereof I do not know, I do not speak.
Have you ever been having there's an accusation that Father Conrad was involved in bringing this event here, and then I see him shaking his head over here. So there seems to be some kind of misinformation as to this, and then just
hear his response. This is about Mr. Hitchens, not Father Conrad. Next question.
Well, perhaps people will be interested to hear what the Father's response is. Absolutely. Well, it's the Father. I think it's the Father you're pressing, not I.
You have not. I'm Emil Bowman. I'm the chair of Modern Religion Classics, and we sponsored this event because it is to be open and debated, and now it is a matter of free speech. It does not mean that we accept the views. That's a co-sponsorship.
That's scarcely.
charity as well, that people's desire, they kind of, I notice that people over here like to talk about secular charity, the United Way, and like, you know, donating to it, you can do no wrong. And so I was wondering if you'd also kind of extend your critique of Mother Teresa is also about charity, the way people think of charity as well.
Well, look, this charity originally means love, right? Caritas. It means it's a version of compassion and of considering other people as members of your own body, in a sense, of thinking, really thinking, that what is happening to them could just as well be happening to you, and of following the golden rule of treating them as you would wish others to treat you. That's charity. It's under, because of some conditions of late Victorian capitalism, it's become associated with the idea of the poor, in an orderly manner, lining up with tugging their forelocks to receive the bounty of the rich as part of a sort of social compact. Now, are the people I know who are, for example, trying to organize agricultural reform in the countryside of Zimbabwe, are they charity workers? I don't think they'd recognize themselves in the description. Sometimes they'd say aid or relief or development workers. I would prefer to be called that if I was compassionate enough or unselfish enough to be doing it myself. But I think everyone understands the distinction. Now, the thing about the particular concept of charity that's involved in some kinds of missionary work, and there are experts here who can correct me if I'm wrong, is this, that Mother Teresa would say that these people allowed demonstrations of love to be made in return to the Creator, right? That, as she put it, the world is being very much helped by the sufferings of the poor people. She believed poverty was ineradicable and unchangeable, and therefore there would always be occasions for this transcendent votive activity. Well, that is fine. It is a position of a kind. It's not the position I share. It's not the view people believed her to have held or praised her for holding. That's all. I mean, if you want me to say what I think about that conception of charity, I'll happily do so, but I think that would detain us. I think you can guess, too.
I'm not sure I can stand the excitement.
You put it very enticingly, I've got to say that. Let's go for the question. I've made up my mind.
I read that there was some controversy about the use of dead bodies for medicine, cadavers, and skeletons, and that a lot of them were coming from India. And if that's true, could it be that Mother Teresa might be...
I'm not going there. I'm not going there. Has that line ever worked for you? I mean, with anyone? Go on.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for a very, very refreshing viewpoint. I'm kind of tying in your analysis or condemnation of Mother Teresa with the Catholic Church. And having been raised a Catholic, no longer, and tying in with the girl over there who left and saying all the love she got from Mother Teresa, the decades I belonged to the Catholic Church, I found the love I received in direct proportion to how much money I gave them. That is the main reason I no longer participate in the Catholic Church. It's all about money.
Stop the capital bashing.
It's money. It's the bottom line. Money. It's the Catholic Church.
How much money did you give and how much love did you get in return?
Well, do you feel you've asked your question or made your point? I don't think you should be stopped from doing so.
Well, actually,
was that it?
I came here to listen to you, not to talk about some of these
clusters. Okay. Well, then I'll take it as a comment. I'll add, though, if I may, briefly. I know it is true. And has often been said that there is a mercenary aspect to many churches. I've never been a member of one for long enough to find out for myself. But I've heard it reliably said, and I think I can see how it could happen, and tithing and so forth. And one certainly sees these sort of Hoover preachers on television, not Catholics by any means, so it's not Catholic bashing, sir, who appear to have really found out what it is to have a flock who will believe anything and, can be, and to live up to the old adage about the fool and the money. And it's not a pleasant spectacle. But my quarrel with the religious is not to do with that. My quarrel with the religious is with my feeling, my conviction that the metaphysical claims that they make are not true. All right. That, for example, as this undoubtedly sincere gentleman said here, it is quite morally impossible that someone, however virtuous, who was put to death by the Roman Empire 2,000 years ago, can bind me posthumously to a debt to him. Okay? It's not morally possible to do that. It seems to me a ridiculous claim on its face. I'm sort of glad it isn't true. It's self-evidently untrue. Okay? A vicarious redemption is an amoral idea. It teaches people not to be responsible for themselves, but to cast it all on somebody else. The ancient Palestinian name for that, in the dawn of monotheism, was the scapegoating. You pile it all on an animal and drive it into the desert. How splendidly we progress. Oh, well, no, Mother Teresa has brought her work and her order to many cities in the United States, to Washington, I know, where I live, to New York, to San Francisco, that I can be sure of. There may be others, maybe other people who can lengthen the list, but undoubtedly she has done that. I have in my book some very severe criticisms made by people who worked in those establishments about what they really do. For example, in the treatment of AIDS, the treatment of AIDS victims, and also the discussion of what AIDS really is. But I can't say that they aren't giving it a try.
Hey, John. Why don't you cast up? Are you afraid?
He's had his hand up for a long time.
Go ahead.
I did work with Mother Teresa for 3 years. And I know what they do. And I helped people die. And I was, they came very bitter when they came into the house, to the hospice, as you call it. They don't call it a home, they don't call it hospice, they call it home.
Home for the dying destitute.
Right, but it's about 586 of them throughout the world, 126 workers. And all the people that I assisted, dying of AIDS, they came bitter, like if I had done it myself to them. And when they died with a smile, every single one of them. Now you tell me if you can do better.
Oh, we will. Yeah. I don't claim to do better, and I don't believe I have to prove that I could. But I've already told you that I know a much better solution to the problem of poverty than Mother Teresa. Now, as to, I don't know what you saw in Calcutta, I take your word for it. Oh, where was it? In Washington, D.C.
And New York.
When, can I just ask you, is it your view that poverty is beautiful and a gift from God?
No.
That is not your view.
But if you are in a condition in which you are dying and you don't have anybody, and they come and pick you up and, yes, bring, and give you a home and give you love and give you, you know, the people that never knew them, help them. All the volunteers and all the sisters gave them love. And if nothing else, these people were happy at the end. Because they knew love for the first time, and selfish love.
But you wouldn't understand that.
Well, I'm not sure how you can know that.
You wouldn't understand that, sir, because
I wonder. Well, I'm not sure how you can know that they knew unselfish love for the first time.
You cannot understand.
That could well be. I don't know how you can know that they knew unselfish love for the first time, but I have no quarrel with what you're telling me. It is, after all, it's pretty well known that, you know, that there is a very strong effort by Mother Teresa's people to... We wouldn't be talking here if we didn't know this. I have people who have worked there as well, in my book, who have different experiences, different conclusions, and different theories about what is really meant by the work. I've also met people who felt it helped them, as well as others, very much to go there. Governor Jerry Brown, who is a slight friend of mine, ran for president on the assumption it would make him look better if he could say all of this. I know he's not a liar or a fool. However, the argument is about what is this work for, what is its motive, and many other questions that I think I've probably adequately ventilated. We simply have a different opinion.
You see, you know, we don't have equal time, because I also wrote a paper in which I can refute every single thing in your paper.
Well, I'm willing to go on the road where we can do a dog and pony show. I'm perfectly serious.
No, if I am allowed to show it, I would be glad to put it on.
You've made a friend in me.